Hi, good morning. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
This is Lillian. Good morning.
Hey, hi.
Okay, I am trying to figure out why this is stuck. Are you on the web conference call?
I am. I am watching you play with the button.
Okay, yeah. This button here is stuck for some reason. And I can't get to my desktop or to the conference console. I don't think anyone else is on yet.
No, of course not. It's only 11 o'clock. Why would we expect anyone to be here?
Well, it's 8 o'clock here. And definitely people aren't on. Okay, so... Hi, Greg. It's Lillian.
Hi, Lillian.
Hi. Who just joined? Okay. I'm having issues here. As you guys can see, my desktop. I can't get out of this conference details box.
Oh, on Meeting Place?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a constant...
Does this happen? It does this?
I'm not sure. I've tried to do things like use the virtual whiteboard, and I've had a lot of trouble getting back to the normal conference view after that.
Yeah, well, the problem is I can't allow you to share my desktop or allow you guys to share your desktop. So that's the problem here. You see?
Yeah.
So what I might have to do is... set up a new meeting ID.
You want to set up a new meeting ID?
Yeah, so that I can close out of this completely, you know?
Okay.
I'll wait till everybody gets on the phone, and then let me try to do that right now. I'm sorry, Paul. Paul's on the phone. Paul Dorsey. I don't know if I have to... Hold on. Hi, Lonnie.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Morning. It's evening, actually, almost evening here.
Oh, that's
so.
Right. It's evening there. Okay, I'm having some issues here with my...
Yeah, I was. At first I thought I was having issues, but then I realized I was looking at your desktop, so...
Yeah, no, and I can't seem to get out of this... I don't know if it's freezing up or... I hate this, I'm sorry. Well, it looks like I might have to just reboot. I'm sorry, you guys. Okay, I'm just going to reboot because nothing is happening here. That's my daughter. So who do we have on the phone? We have Lonnie, Paul, Greg. Who else joined? That's it? Okay. Greg, is Tug joining?
I think I was kind of expecting to be on the... I just got him here on IM. And he should join... Well, you should already be on. If you want, we can just start to move forward. I mean, it's not...
Okay. I'd rather have this conference. I mean, you can begin speaking if you like.
How many people do you anticipate being on the call?
I was hoping all five regional directors would be on, but actually, Peter is not available, so I was hoping four would be on the phone. And it looks like there are two that have joined.
Yeah, I do see Harshad in the list.
Harshad's in the list? Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure if he's on the phone, but I see him in the list.
Okay. So he might be having issues dialing in like he has in the past.
Yeah.
So...
What's up with Peter? Why can't Peter make it?
Peter, you know, ironically or coincidentally, the last web conference and this scheduled web conference, he's teaching a class at the same time.
Oh, man.
So he won't be, yeah, he wasn't able to join last time or this time because he's teaching, and he said he rarely teaches. And it's just, you know, coincidental that we scheduled the web conference around the same time he has to teach.
Yeah, well, gosh, if you ever heard Peter speak, I mean, there's a good reason for that.
Well, you know, I have at the mini theater only, but I intend to see him at Open World.
Of course, I'm just kidding. Peter is a very good speaker.
Well, you guys are both good authors, too.
Well, in years past, Peter used to be, like, really dry. And
really?
I mean, he's still sort of got a dry sense of humor, but it used to be that he was not real fun to listen to, but he's gotten much better as a speaker. Now it's...
Hi, Tug.
Hi. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I'm getting my computer boot up because it's not booting up. And I was having issues with the web console. So I apologize that we're delayed here for a few minutes. Okay, so let's go.
Hey, so, Lillian, I just wanted to give you one quick word of warning. We're on an all-IP phone system here, and we've been having problems with the router. So if we're in the middle of the presentation, all of a sudden everything goes quiet. It means that the network's dropped.
Okay.
I think the probability of that happening is slim to none, but, you know, just in case, I just wanted to let you know what's going on.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, every time I try to prepare early for something like this, nothing goes right.
No good act ever goes unpunished.
Okay, what is wrong now? Okay, I'm connected. I'm connected here.
I'm glad you guys didn't work for a technology company that, you know, could actually build this kind of software. Oh, you do work for a technology company that built this software.
Don't rub it in. Okay, I have no idea why I can't get on now.
Do you want me to just start an instant conference? I can give out the...
Yeah, why don't you do that, and then... Because I don't know why I can't get on now.
Okay.
Do you mind, Greg?
No. I will do
that. Sorry about that.
Okay, I've got a conference starting, which should show up. If you go to conference.oracle.com, as SOA, let's see what they call it, SOA Overview for Regional Directors. And I'm going to read the conference ID out. I mean, I'll read it several times, but it's 53692841. If you just put that conference ID in, you won't need a key. There's nothing that's really, truly proprietary here. You want me to read that ID one more time?
I'm still looking for that site where I have the list of conferences.
If you just go over, if you go to conference.oracle.com, and you put in the conference ID. On the right-hand side, there'll be a join conference box, and you put the conference ID right into that join conference box and click join conference. You should I'm not sure what it does about instant conferences, if it lists them in the left-hand side or not.
So what, because I don't see that one that you were saying in the list.
Yeah, if you just go to the right-hand side, there should be a box that says instant conference and a box below that that says join conference. Do you see a join conference box?
Yeah.
If you just put the conference ID in there and then hit join conference, it should work. So let me read the number again.
Yeah.
It's 53692841.
Hello?
Yes?
Who just joined? Okay, my console is back up, so... Is everybody on the new conference ID?
No, I'm still trying.
Yeah, I mean, if it's easier and Lillian's is working, we can revert to that.
I think I'm on yours now. It says Greg.
Okay.
At the top, so.
Yeah, okay, excellent.
Okay, perfect. So we'll just use... Is everybody on the new conference ID? Paul?
Second.
Okay. And I'm not sure who else joined.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I see slides.
Okay,
okay, great.
Perfect.
So
sorry about that.
What I can do is shift to the slideshow. Is this... Can you guys see this? Well, on your screen?
Looks fine.
Okay, good. Good.
Okay.
Is everybody on board, or?
I think so. Let's get started.
Okay, great.
Behind schedule. Okay, so we have Greg Pavlik and Tug Grawl on the line, and they are going to be our presenters today on SEA. Okay, so you can go ahead.
So I'm Tug Grawl, and I am product manager on the Oracle AS web services stack. And Greg is one of the architects on the Oracle AS of Oracle Application Server, focusing on the SCA and the web services and integrations. And what we choose to do today is, instead of only presenting service component architecture as a technologies, as a set of technology, we try to also put that in the context of what is the vision of Oracle products, what will SCA, how SCA will impact our product for the next release. So I let now Greg talk about SCA, SOA, and the next release of Oracle Application Server.
Okay, great. That's a pretty good setup there. The area I work on primarily relates to integration technologies, service-oriented architectures, web services, and this sort of core piece of infrastructure that we have positioned for the SOA segment and also to underlie the application suite moving forward from an end-to-end architectural perspective. Our basic agenda here is just to basically set the stage on what we're talking about and some reasonable ways to think about service-oriented architectures, why they're important, how this service component architecture standard that Oracle is helping to drive feeds into the SOA space and really starts to strengthen the vendor solutions that are coming out there. I'll talk a bit about our technology specifically, our SOA suite and how it's using these SCA constructs to push things forward to a next generation platform, and then we can kind of open things up for questions to get your perspective on this. Now, I work primarily on the engineering and product side. And if I start to go into too low-level a view of the technology, just stop me. Just make this presentation very interrupt-driven so we tune it toward your interest and your questions. I kind of put together an outline that I think makes some sense in terms of covering this area reasonably well, but everybody kind of comes to these kind of discussions with different backgrounds and different interests. So please feel free to just take over that presentation and redirect me, and we'll handle that change of direction and tune the presentation to your interests. So first thing I just wanted to set the stage with was what is a SOA? It's this question that everybody seems to have in the back of their mind, while at the same time everybody's talking about adopting toward a SOA, and everybody's talking about how service-oriented architectures is the next big thing in technology. It certainly hit a peak on the hype curve, I think, at this point. So I've kind of boiled it down to three characteristics that I think focus more on the business value rather than the technology, or rather what does the technology bring to the business. Number one, when we talk about SOAs, we're talking about business services that are built to handle a task or function independent of other business services. And that allows us to start to build systems that are very flexible, because the constituent building blocks can be easily repurposed in other and new contexts. There's some challenges with this, right? So if you're building a let's say a purchase order system, and you've got less control of the end-to-end business processes that consume it, it can be more difficult to gauge things like predictive patterns of use for hardware sizing purposes, for example. We're not going to talk about this in this particular presentation, but in other contexts, it's often a good segue to talk a bit about grid computing technologies and the ability to do flexible provisioning of resources to your business solution to allow you to cope with these unpredictable patterns of use. But for now, what I'd actually like to talk about in this presentation is more how this allows us to start to think about designing systems of software assets in a data center. And we'll get into discussions about how ESBs are important in that context, et cetera. Secondly, the level of abstraction for a SOA is raised significantly. It's moved away from programming code, Java code-specific constructs that are hardwired or baked into application design, and more toward business documents, the exchange of business information, and business process flows that are more directly related to the business problem, or directly related to the business space as opposed to the technology space. As a result, we're moving to a design center that's really focused on driving the solution from the business process view, the business analyst view, and business users can actually start to understand the technology solutions. So it's a lot different than the OO paradigm, where people were talking about object-oriented programming and using programming language concepts to model the business environment. Now we're talking about business documents, business exchanges that are all centered around processing business information. And that's sort of a design center shift that I think service-oriented architectures enable here. And one of the nice and useful things that comes out of this is we can start to talk about, well, now that we've got these basic business services that do useful things or critical business functions in the enterprise, how do we start to compose them in new ways? How do we adapt our business processes? And this is one of the reasons that we're pretty excited about our Bitbull technology, because we've got an environment in which we can start to weave these services together to provide new business functionality and then change them over time in ways that are much more flexible than going in and having to rebuild core software assets that are built in C or built in Java or COBOL or something like that. So one of the other points of confusion I think often comes up is that this notion that web services and so are synonymous, and that you can't do service-oriented computing concepts without wholesale adoption of web services and SOAP everywhere. And that's not really true. I think the really good example of this is, this is probably applicable if you've had experience with the Bipple product. The design center for Bipple is such that you talk about business interfaces, you talk about the exchange of business documents, but the protocols and the wire level construct, the sort of low level details of the technology, are completely abstracted away from the business process definition. So at some level, prior to deployment, an administrator or a technologist or a developer or some team that has that specialized expertise comes together and binds the Bipple process to the communication endpoints that it needs to talk to. But it's really not core to the business process design. It's not core to the definition of the business service that the Bipple process is offering. And that's generically true across all the SOA infrastructure that we're designing moving forward. We want to talk about business interfaces, and we will use things like WSDL to describe them because it's an easy thing for us to build tooling around, and it's also becoming more or less ubiquitous as vendors start to converge on WSDL as a common interface language. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're constrained to work with a specific set of web service protocols, and it also doesn't mean that the end user has to be intimately familiar with all the details of the web services environment.
Well,
I think having said that, I think there's a lot of nice things about SOAP and other web services standards that help us with interoperability. So while they're mutually independent, they're also, I think, reinforcing technology ideas for service-oriented architectures. Was somebody about to ask a question? Okay. Let me just pause then and ask it. I'll ask a question to you. Does that make sense?
Well, I was trying to interrupt. I think my phone wasn't cooperating.
Okay.
So can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. Okay. So let me see if I got this straight. I mean, I understand that. SOA and web services are not interchangeable things, right? A web service is just a way of isolating business functionality. But it does seem that SOA is fundamentally about isolating business functionality. Now, whether you physically implement that with a web service or, as far as I'm concerned, I guess we could implement it with a PL/SQL function. I mean, what do I care, right? But logically, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. I mean, logically, when I think of SOA, I'm thinking, I'm completely stateless, and I'm going to, pass, some information to my SOA thing, whether it's a web service or not, and my SOA thing is going to respond somehow. And I could conceivably fake stateful by it could remember what I did the last time, and it could have some stuff stored, but basically, I come walking up to this thing as if it were a stateless engine, and I pass it information, and it passes me stuff back. And that is fundamentally my architecture about SOA.
That's a very good way to think about it. I would, the term stateless is kind of funny, because there are things when you start to talk about, let's say you're doing a long-running business process that has to do with provisioning of a cable system at a user's home, and there's multiple steps. When you go through that process of provisioning the service, let's say you've implemented it with something like Bipple, you will have some notion of long-running systems and long-running state. But in general, I think when you're building these these basic building blocks of business services. You want to aim for things that are stateless and are acting on the content of the business message. And I very much agree with your point that these are services that can offer their functionality in isolation from each other. Because that's really, you know, the part of the genius of this is that because we strive for this goal of relative isolation, and we're able to recombine these things in new ways as the business environment changes. Okay, so we're one more slide on SOA. And that's that, you know, in some sense, you know, look at the environment today, and there's lots of technologies out there. There's lots of capabilities that are critical to running a business today that we're not going to try and abandon. But one of the things here we want to do is to be able to start to rationalize these different systems and bring them together. And SOA really, our SOA suite in particular, is aimed at providing that kind of glue functionality that will allow you to tie these systems together, but then also offer them and provision them out into the environment in the enterprise in such a way that they can be composed and understood in terms of this new architecture that we're talking about for organizing a data center. In our case, I don't know how familiar you guys are with the SOA Suite product, but we're releasing this 10.1.3 product, which features an ESB, the BIPL process engine, human workflow capabilities, adapters to various back-end systems, and it's a pretty significant advance for us from a product perspective, in that it takes a lot of these technologies that are useful for constructing this kind of architecture and data center and puts them together into a single bundle, single tool, so you're not forced to migrate from environment to environment, and adds common management functionality together in the enterprise manager environment to allow users to administer these things through a common console and common administrative experience. 10.1.3 SOA release is the first generation of that integrated packaging, and I think it's a substantial advance from an end-user perspective in terms of usability of the products when you put them together. A lot of what I'm going to be talking about today in the context of service component architecture is the next generation of the next iteration of those products to kind of give you guys feedback in terms of where we're going and how we're going about it. This release that we're targeting for our 11AS for the Fusion architecture and for Fusion applications is all about sort of advancing this paradigm of common, well-integrated SOA functionality on a single tooling basis, a single runtime basis, a single management basis. So the next slide starts to talk about, well, okay, this all sounds good, but where are we today? You know, we've got Java, we've got J2E programming, and...
Can I ask a question about that single tooling?
Yes.
You're talking about? Because are you talking about JDeveloper then? Because there's some, in the 10.1.3.1 preview, there's some functionality for BPEL and workflow and stuff like that, or is it a separate package?
Yeah, and what we're doing is building out JDeveloper as an IDE that's available for more than just Java programming, right? So
yeah.
All the capabilities to work with these declarative XML processing languages, like BIPL, like ESB, are being built into a single release of JDeveloper. So you can download one.
So what about the Eclipse plugin then? Is that going to be abandoned or still going to be available?
No. In fact, they're probably going to continue to enrich the Eclipse developer options. I mean, the reality is that there are shops that are happy to uptake JDeveloper and work in that environment, but there are also organizations that are wholly dedicated to Eclipse. You know, they're basically Eclipse development shops. So our goal is to be able to make them productive on the software suite as well. I mean, there are some advantages to working with JDeveloper in that we can control more of the environment end-to-end
to make a kind of seamless integrated experience across everything we offer.
Yeah.
But we're trying to start to move to the toward the spot where we can make similar claims for Eclipse users. Just in all honesty, we're further along with JDeveloper developer because it's our environment.
Yeah.
But we're certainly not going to abandon the people that are using Eclipse.
Okay, so if you're saying one tool, you don't mean that you're going to stop that support. It's just...
No, so just to clarify, when we talk about one tool, it's one tool for when you want to build an application that you use Oracle AS and Oracle JDeveloper. With one single tool, you will be able to do everything. Build a web application,
yeah,
and at the same time, DeepL on ESB, on deploy, on add security, on test. However, we want to be sure that DeepL on Java Server Faces, on all this technology, are used by the community, and we don't necessarily want to force them to use JDeveloper. So we still develop the plugin for Eclipse, we still develop the plugin for Eclipse for people, we still do that for Java Server Faces on EGB3.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's part of, in one case, the web tool platform, in the other case, of the people platform. So it's not the platform, it's Eclipse in one case where we don't have a full control, we participate to the projects.
Yeah.
In the other end, and it's one of the advantages of keeping JDeveloper present within Oracle, is we can integrate all together in one single tool.
Sure. And what about the business users? Are they supposed to work in JDeveloper Eclipse to design the process, or is something else going to be provided for them?
So if you take a look at ESB today in 10.1.3.1, you can either build and modify that either from the console in the HTML tool or in JDeveloper. So the business user will have the choice of doing some part of it in the design tool inside the JDeveloper that will be a business user-oriented or inside the HTML view.
Okay, but in your typical case, there will be a developer and a business analyst doing that together, right? So they use...
Yes.
But I don't think a business analyst would, you know, be very comfortable using JDeveloper or Eclipse. The design
process. So I think it's I would like to continue to Greg continue to present on SEO, and we agree on that. And yes, we can turn JDeveloper to be more simple or focus on business user or use the HTML view, so the console, the analytic console, to modify or analyze the ESB or the BPM, for example.
Right. Well, specifically for the BPM case, a business analyst would work with a higher level. Would need to work on a higher level model than what the developer or the BIPL developer is going to be comfortable with, and they're going to have to come together, understand the business flow, and then the BIPL developer is going to be responsible for mapping that directly into BIPL. So that I wouldn't expect that to occur, the initial BPM level design to occur in JDeveloper.
Okay.
Yeah. this next slide, just, you know, today there's a lot of great technology out there and richness of technology offering, but it does create a burden for the developer to try to figure out how to put all these things together. You know, there's lots of choices in the J2E world. There's things like BIPL, there's things like ESB. And if you go to virtually any vendor, you're looking at a series of tools that require a good deal of mastery to really bring them together and weave them together into a single solution, which is a pretty substantial investment. So one of the goals, the main goal really we have in working together with IBM, BEA, SAP, and other vendors in this SCA consortium, Service Component Architecture Working Group, is really to start to lower the learning curve, lower the bar, and lessen the learning curve for end users who are looking to do SOA in these environments, to give them a common model to think about how to organize the SOA paradigm and SOA architecture in their data center and in their solutions without having to resort to immediately thinking about all these low-level technologies. And so the main thing I want to talk about as a centerpiece of this meeting is the service component architecture and what it represents and how it provides a solution or starts to provide a solution to this problem. So what we're aiming for in our product and what we're using at SCA is a piece to try to simplify this is to provide a single framework that the user is exposed to as a design time environment, as a runtime environment, as a management environment for building SOA applications. And when they need to build segments of business logic in the SOA, they'll go into specific technology areas that are typically based on declarative XML processing rules. So BIPL would be an example, ESB would be an example, human workflow would be an example. I mean, these are all technologies that are based on XML, that are centered around processing XML, and are oriented toward working with and manipulating business documents. If you look today at the offerings that are out there in the market, you'll typically have a BIPL product. The BIPL product would connect to an ESB. The ESB might be able to send something out to a human workflow system. They'll probably delegate to a third-party messaging system to do some of the mediation between systems to process business events. And what we're really aiming to do here is provide a single hub that gives you all these capabilities in one integrated runtime, when you can go into a common tool and develop a business app that combines these technologies and allows you to do business processes, packaging these up, and then just doing a simple deployment into the infrastructure. So SCA is in some sense a centerpiece to this, this kind of integrated solution, because what it allows you to do is provide a single model for the description of services and service composition. SCA is essentially centered around an assembly model that provides a description for a component in a service-oriented architecture and how it relates to other services in the system. And we'll look at examples of that. But the important, one of the key critical points here is that the SCA metadata and the description that comes out of the assembly model is ambivalent about the underlying technology. So the service itself could be implemented in terms of BIPL. It could be an ESB endpoint. It could be a Java component, whether it be the SCA working group is looking at several different ways to integrate Java business logic that we'll talk about. Regardless of the implementation technique that you use, SCA provides a mechanism to say, look, I have a service here. The service has these input points that it offers for other consumers in the SOA environment to use, and it's connected to services X, Y, and Z in the back end, which is a fairly powerful addition to the programming model, a toolkit that's out there right now. If you step back and think about it right now, if users forced to work in a BIPL environment and a J2E environment at the same time, there is no common bridge between those two worlds today. There's sort of BIPL and BIPL's packaged in a proprietary way, and J2E is packaged and J2E is packaged in a standard way. They're separate spaces which require a pretty significant context switch to move between, and there's no way to describe, in normal terms at least, the interconnects between those two systems. So SCA kind of comes to the table and tries to provide a solution to that problem. So in some sense, you could think about SCA as a common or normal packaging model for services, and then at a higher level, you can think of SCA as a way to describe the relationships between services and start to provide a modeling context for a SOA. So did somebody start to ask a question there? Okay. So last point is one of our goals and one of our big emphasis on the product side has been to really embrace and drive standards that we think are going to be useful for the customer base. And SCA, I think, is an important part of that strategy. We're working pretty extensively in the working group with the other vendors and putting quite a bit of resources and time into really trying to make make this a really solid technology offering. The next slide is kind of try to put into graphical terms what I was describing there. You can think of this as the description of a graphical description of a service composed of two components. The component could represent two BIPL processes that work together in a tightly coupled fashion. It could be a BIPL process that's packaged up with some human workflow elements so that your business process can be extended to work not only with other services that are out there, but also with specific tasks that require human interaction to complete the business process functionality. These get packaged together in a common composite view of a service, and the left-hand side shows the service which represents the interface into the system, or the interface into the service, so typically that would be described in terms of WSDL. And the right-hand side shows a reference which indicates the external services that this business logic will be wired to connect to. And this actually is pretty useful concept because once we are at the point we can define declaratively the wiring between the interfaces and business logic in the service composition itself, we can start to inject policies. We can start to control the service lifecycle elements around provisioning the use of a service. We can start to deal with services that are offered through different legacy protocols and different technologies in a way that is isolated and independent of the experience that the developer or the business analyst or the two in combination have when they start to compose their business processes and workflows. This is a fairly clean way to separate business logic and business composition, process definition, from the underlying technologies that ultimately you have to interface with to get network connectivity between the services in the data center. One of the things is kind of...
Can I drop you down to an example for a second?
Yes.
Okay. So let's imagine a simple process flow for a purchase order. I mean, it's going to go through three levels of approval and something or other before it gets approved. So I'm going to have various nodes that are manual processing nodes and various nodes that are automatic processing nodes. Are we imagining that each one of those is like an SOC, and then your BIPL process would call those different elements, and they could all be conceivably built with different technologies? Is that the vision?
Relatively close to that. I mean, your BIPL process would manage the overall orchestration of the business process, and the call-outs to external services would just be mapped to wires to references that will be finalized by an administrator who is responsible for deploying or putting this whole solution out into the network environment. The human tasks can be modeled as components that are packaged together with the service, and then the technology can be co-deployed onto this common runtime environment, that allowing this to sort of act as a single unit that provides these orchestrations of external services into the business process flow, and allows you to sort of start to bring in the human task involvement in the business.
And then the BIPL stuff is all implemented on the app server level. So any references that I have to do to other places would then get pulled off through, I guess, their own little SOA elements or calls down to the database or whatever.
Yeah, but you would express those declaratively through these references. So you wind up one fairly useful analogy for the simple case of just a BIPL process talking to, let's say, a database would be today. If you look at the 10.1.3 offering, we have this, you put your BIPL process into what we call a BIPL suitcase, which is a kind of proprietary packaging to put Bipple into a deployment unit and then wrapper it with the binding information it needs to talk to the database or talk to other backend services. This composite gives you something similar. You know, you can wrapper up your Bipple process with the extra metadata it needs to talk to the outside world. But it also gives you something that's a bit more sophisticated than what we offer in Bipple today, in that you can start to put other components, other pieces of business logic or XML processing technology together with the Bipple process, so that you can have this sort of richer execute. You have a richer solution that's supported by the execution environment than you can achieve today. So, I mean, I'm not sure. I'm hoping I'm answering your question, but the key point here is that these interactions, you can configure the endpoints that the interactions occur with declaratively, and they're divorced from the business logic itself. So you start to design. You know, one of the main goals here is to allow people to design their business logic with this idea of greater isolation in mind. So one other take on this that might simplify. You could imagine that component A was a Bipple process, simple Bipple process that just needed to consume information from another external service. Component B could just be some set of routing and transformation rules that allow you to sort of further divorce the Bipple process from the outside execution environment.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, this all, I think, just keeps hammering back me, because I've got very complex processes that now I'm managing in various projects. And
mm-hmm.
When I talk about this stuff and I sat down with, you know, the Bipple guys, the Bipple architect guy at ODTUG, I forget his name. But you know, again, this stuff makes all sorts of sense to me when we're talking about, you know, things that are like web services, you know, meaning these, you know, big macro components as we're going back and forth, you know, trying to manage how we bolt systems together. But when people talk about this, and we're doing it here, is we sort of have this sense that I can take, you know, a simple purchase order process and it makes sense in this context, and I don't get it. It just strikes me as being, you know, the wrong engine. It's a chainsaw that you can cut bread with, but I don't get it. I mean, it doesn't seem to me that I don't see the bridge from what we're talking about here down to this being the appropriate chainsaw to go cut up, managing an HR process flow. It makes all sorts of sense to me for example, I get done managing the HR process and then I want to, you know, take this thing and call out to something to do a security clearance, and then I want to throw it over, in my context, I'm doing recruiting and I call out for something to do the security clearance and then I throw it over the wall to do HR. Managing those gross components, this seems like the perfect tool for doing it. But then when I'm down and I've got literally hundreds of states flying through this stuff that I want to run reasonably efficiently, I mean, we implement all that stuff down in the database and it's, you know, all lickety-split and gorgeous. I don't have context switches going back and forth, you know, 45 times as I'm going from state to state. It just strikes me as being a silly solution to, I mean, even if you described it this way, why would you implement with all of these enforced context switches? It just seems like a bad way to architect.
Yeah, so the reason I've been trying to use simple examples and talk about something like, well, imagine you had a simple purchase order, is because I want to start with something that's comprehensible, so we can talk about specifically about how SCA is constructed and
okay, so are we on the so you think it's not appropriate in that context?
Look, so I actually did a presentation last year in Amsterdam on the design of service-oriented applications, and what I did there was talked about what I call primitive services, which are sort of basic building blocks that will be sort of recursively recomposed and then recomposed into more sophisticated business processes. And when it comes to building these simple building blocks, you know, my own bias is to use a technology that's straightforward, probably closer to what the average programmer is comfortable with doing with Java code or in the database or whatever, and then start to expose those out as services into the SOA environment using web services technologies. And then when you start to talk about more complicated, long-lived compositions and interconnections, that's when you really want to start looking at the specific SOA technologies, in my opinion. I think we're absolutely on the same page, and I think that what I wanted to get across in this presentation was, you know, conceptually, what are the kinds of things that SCA gives you as a model, and it's difficult sometimes to get people get those points across if you start with really, really complicated business processes, because at least in my experience, what happens is people tend to get really caught up in trying to figure out the really complicated business processes and all the, you know, well, what does all this mean and how does it work in a low level of detail? And I often find we wind up talking more about that than we do about the technology aspect. But I hear what you're saying, and I think that's a perfectly a correct way to look at the world.
Well, if it is, then, I mean, given that complex, detailed process flows of, you know, purchase orders going through three levels of approval is something we need to articulate, is that still an articulation mechanism that in this architecture is up for grabs? Or, I mean, is that a problem that you think you haven't solved yet?
Well, I think when you start to talk about more complicated business processes with lots of interconnects and service dependencies, then I think that the model that we're talking about here works. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. It eases a lot of complexity from a design point of view and from a maintenance point of view. Because when you're doing a lot of these things that are long-lived and they have got process state, if you try and implement and they've got asynchronous interactions, you sit down and try and actually just implement all that as a developer, you wind up having to basically recreate a BIPL engine or a workflow engine. And to me, that's madness. Once you've committed to that path, you're signing up for a tremendous amount of work that you really don't have to do anymore. And it's non-trivial, so it tends to be error-prone and take quite a bit of extended testing and debugging to get a solution right in that space. And then, you know, if you think about trying to redo that again and again across, you know, potentially hundreds of services, you know, that would be the path. That would be a path of I would be hesitant to take if I put myself in the role of an IT.
No, I think that's fair. I think my point is that, yes, BIPL solves that problem. Hand coding doesn't solve that problem well, but I don't think BIPL solves that problem particularly well either.
But is this isn't about the technology, is it? It's about because there's all kinds of bindings that you can choose. You don't have to do any switching between different stuff, right?
Well, it's not true. I mean, BIPL lives in, I mean, it certainly doesn't mean, I mean, it's not a business rule approach of where we're articulating our business rule in some sort of agnostic repository and then choosing where to stuff the stuff. I mean, we are writing implementation logic that's going to be running off in the app server. So, for example, we don't have the option of stuffing this down in the database implemented as PL/SQL. You know, that's not an option.
Well,
doing database intensive stuff, we will be doing context switching.
Yeah, you can use PL/SQL and expose database web services and weave things together.
Well, that would be as the SOA that would be as the service oriented components. I mean,
yeah,
not as the BIPL engine itself. The BIPL engine itself is inherently the BIPL engine.
Yeah, the BIPL engine will be in the middle.
That's actually
tier.
My question: do you have to use the BIPL engine for this SCA stuff? Does it say
no? So BIPL is one one technology supported on our SOA platform. I mean, we do actually, you know, you mentioned using business rules and so forth. We do actually offer as part of this decision service that's essentially a business rules engine that piggybacks off a rule repository. But I think if I understand the initial question here, it's like, it's more, well, if I live specifically in a database-centric world, does this mean that, is this implying a migration into the middle tier? Is that really what one of the core questions here?
I don't know that I'm asking about a migration of the middle tier. I'm just trying to imagine a database-centric process and what sort of performance nightmare that's going to be. I mean, I'm just imagining the stuff that I've got right now running and trying to, you know, contemplate if I migrated it into this architecture, what would that do for or to me? And I think it would do a lot more to me than for me.
So, I mean,
the other way around, right? You don't want to do it because you have to make it a service-oriented architecture. If you have
something
that you want to reuse.
I would assert it's already a service-oriented architecture. The point being is it's not using this engine, so therefore it runs fast.
But you're talking essentially about a composition of business logic that's built into the database using PL/SQL, and it's, I guess, collaboratively interleaved in the database.
Well, we've written our own engine, so I've got stuff that does all this. So I'm trying to, so what I'm trying to contemplate is, does it make sense to refactor out of our engine into the Beeple engine, or to use our articulation mechanism to generate Beeple code? And I mean, that's why I'm sort of, you know, pressing more on these, because I've got these long-term persistent process flows that are articulated with, you know, hundreds of states. And I'm trying to, you know, talk myself into, should I now change the generator so that I generate, you know, Beeple things rather than generate PL/SQL things? And I can't see any reason to want to do that. And the reason we didn't do it in the first place is that, you know, if you've got stuff that has to keep talking to the database, it should be sitting in the database, not in the app server. But I guess that's the whole, you know, argument against, I mean, this evolution to the middle tier in the first place.
Yeah, well, and to be honest with you, there's plenty of applications where that's appropriate, right? And I mean, one of the things I found also, especially at conferences where there's a lot of users that are coming to kind of learn about SOA, is that the first reaction that people have is, well, should I do this with everything? And generally, my first reaction is no. you know, there are places where this makes a lot of sense, and there are places where you want to put clear boundaries and say that, you know, I'm not going to go there, and you got to take it on a case by case basis. I'm not in sales, so I don't have to pitch anything as a silver bullet. For me, you know, as a technologist, there's a lot of utility to the SOA approach, but it really comes down to, well, what happens, what kind of services are you going to provide? Are they really going to be distributed and used in many different kinds of applications? Are they going to involve many different technologies? You know, am I looking for standards basis in terms of my process expression or language, et cetera. And if, you know, the answers are almost systematically yes, yes, yes. This is the nature of the kind of thing that I'm looking for in this solution. Then this, a lot of the SOA technologies make sense. If you've got, you know, database bound applications that are working today and doing what you need them to do, and, you know, maybe the place to continue to invest is in the database side. Anyways, I would just continue along here. What I wanted to show in conjunction with the graphic on SDA is the actual physical expression in XML. It's really pretty straightforward.
Here you can advertise a service. You can wrapper some components. These happen to be Biffle processes in my example. You can start to talk about the interconnections with other services in terms of their endpoint location, the protocol bindings, the policies that are applied for interacting with these services. So imagine you're in a case where, you know, your HR system is over there and your supply provisioning system is in another silo in your IT organization, and you want to start to bring these things together into a new business process that you're going to make available to your frontline managers. This is a case where things really are separate and distinct, and you probably do want to think about a service-oriented approach, because you've got things that are inherently distributed, and you've got things that are doing discrete functions that you want to combine together in a new way. You can start to squint at this and see a model where it's pretty easy to describe those relationships and start to apply rules and policies between those interaction spaces.
Is that also part of the standard, so that you have like security stuff that you can put in there?
Yes, absolutely. So the working group, the main focus of the policy effort on the working group is to provide both message level and interaction level security rules. And they would have out-of-the-box mapping to the WS Star security standards.
Okay, that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, and from our, and I'll speak specifically about our product roadmap. We've put a pretty heavy investment in the WS security space, and our product set has WS security support at the J2E level. It has it at the web services manager product level. And one of the nice things about having this fully rationalized infrastructure with declarative injection of the security policies is we can bring that all together into one product offering. So there's one enforcement point for WS security in the runtime, and it's just a matter of declaratively attaching policies to say, okay, well, I'd like this service to be secured. I'd like these messages to be signed, et cetera. So this picture here just suggests that in our implementation, you can take these standards-based descriptions of things like business rules, human workflow, Biffle, and package them up together and deploy them to our runtime, to a single runtime, not three different products, just one pre-integrated set of containers that allow you to operate on the business documents and apply declarative rules for business processing. This is just a more detailed view of the product.
Sorry, guys, I got to jump off. I've got to catch a plane, so we'll catch you next one.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, sorry. Bye.
For a more detailed view of the product offering, the main point that I wanted to get across here is that the will support a very complete set of integration technologies in one runtime offering that you'll be able to package up your business logic and your rules for processing your business documents into well-organized deployment units and put them out into this common runtime. And then as messages flow through the system, you've got a very low overhead associated with the processing of your transaction processing. Because these things could be co-located and they can be available in the same process space, it doesn't require you to go out to bridge across three or four different products just to complete a single transaction on a business document. So the idea here is, integration, optimization, improvements of
performance and ease of use. The container itself, this is just, again, drilling down lower level details. We've actually built this in such that we've leveraged the Spring framework, which is an open source framework, to weave together the building blocks that compose this system. The Spring framework's nice for us because it allows us to leverage all the services we have available in J2E, but also start to aim for a runtime that can be portable, or I think the term that we've been using from a marketing perspective is hot pluggable.
Is that the same stuff that's being built into the BEA application server?
No, actually it's very different. So I know BEA, I think IBM, other people are also leveraging Spring in different ways.
Yeah.
This is a specific Oracle product that uses Spring to do lightweight orchestration of the runtime environment. It's sort of hidden from the end user.
Okay, so you use the Spring container and then you put your own components in there.
Yeah, well, we use it to really bootstrap the containers
that
we set up for deploying the infrastructure to. We've been working actually quite a bit with the Spring guys, both in the SDA working group and offline to do things with Spring that facilitate the kind of use cases that we're trying to use it for. Use it more as a kind of building block for infrastructure rather than just for applications. It's pretty interesting technology. I mentioned Spring here primarily for two reasons. Some people are actually pretty interested in how we're using it, but also I wanted to set the stage for the point I want to make later on, which is that we've actually done work to sort of pre-integrate Spring with our service, our SOA runtime, so that people who are using Spring today can basically move their apps onto OC4J running with this service fabric and pretty straightforward integration right into the SOA environment. I'll come back to that. A lot of people have been asking, well, what does this mean today if I'm using ESB, if I'm using BIPL products from Oracle? Does it mean that, all of a sudden we've got a whole bunch of new products and is there risk here? We lost this investment? And actually, the short answer is no. The containers that host the BIPL processes, that host the ESB roles, that host the human workflow capabilities, et cetera, are essentially unchanged. What we've done is we've moved them into one common integrated runtime packaging based on this next generation SOA infrastructure, but the containers themselves continue to function as they have in the past. What this deeper integration has allowed us to do is not only offer one product, one runtime offering, that people can use out of the box in a pre-integrated fashion, but it's also allowed us to really converge the management capabilities so you can start to, for example, look at a composite application, drill down into the details of the BIPL processes that are used to compose the application, and navigate directly to, a web services management view of the endpoints, all within one application context from a EM or management perspective. We're taking the same kind of strategy for tools, so I'll talk about that in a bit. One important addition that we've added to SCA is direct support for business events. SCA is done in terms of abstract WSDL, or using WSDL to describe the business interfaces, which is great for one-way message invocation, for request response style message invocation. What it doesn't model particularly well are sort of pub-sub interactions. So we've actually built these pub-sub style interactions, these sort of ESB type interaction modes directly into the runtime environment, and extended SCA to support that. We're very, very interested in making sure that that's standardized as a part of the SCA effort, and that's one of our next big efforts in the standards community. is to work with the working group and make sure that there's proper support for business events. This slide here shows an EM console, which for people who have used the ESB may look somewhat familiar. What we've done is taken advantage of the fact that these different services for hosting Business Logic are now available in one runtime. And we take the same kind of view that you would see today in the ESB, but allow you to interleave ESB routing rules, business rules from the rules engine, Bipple processes, all into one unified view. So if your actual composite service is composed of these different technologies working together to provide the complete business service, the EM or Enterprise Manager view of the system will be likewise be an integrated view where you can look, where you can get one point of control of your business service, rather than having to kind of deal with multiple products running simultaneously and providing different aspects of the complete solution, which is a really useful thing for people that are today using ESB or PIPL together. This is, I think, a pretty nice evolution of the product capabilities. J Developer, likewise, will provide the ability to work simultaneously with these different technologies in one runtime environment. So you'll be able to start to create a composite service, define a BIPL process, add references to business rules, and package it together in one deployment unit based on this SCA technology. You start to see a much more integrated design time environment, where it's not just that the different kinds of technologies are all there in one tool, it's that the different technologies can be brought together into one solution that can be packaged together and deployed into one runtime. ESB today is, I think, a pretty strong product, and based on the feedback we're getting from customers and from product reviewers, seems to really be getting a lot of interest and uptake. The ESB functionality today is migrated into this SOA platform, so that there's no loss of experience. It really is just, it's in some sense, it's an extension. The entire platform is an extension of the ESB and an enrichment of the overall ESB user experience. So if we go back to this previous slide, this looks almost identical to the experience you would get in the ESB console today, except that when you're working with the ESB console, you're not going to see BIPL processes there, and you're not going to see inline, for example, human workflow elements. You're going to be able to connect services together and apply transformations and rules. Well, here you can get a more sophisticated pattern of relationships between things like routing rules and transformations and your business processes directly in one unit. Now, having said that, if you have a solution that's built on the ESB today that doesn't need those things, you know, there's no loss of functionality or capability. You can still continue to have what you have today work as it does, and then enrich it with more capabilities and services as the system evolves. I think that there's a lot of customers that have been interested in the OWSM product, the Web Services Manager, which is all about security policy enforcement. The OWSM capabilities are built right into the runtime here. Our service fabric that underlies the SOA suite has the ability to take OWSM policies and apply them directly to services that we're hosting in this runtime. So that means you can take your BIPL processes, you can take your ESB-based services, and start to directly apply security policies both at the binding level, so we can do SOAP-specific security policies, and policy enforcement, and we also have added the capability to put policies at the level of abstract whistle so that we can apply, for example, access control rules between two components that are deployed together in a single composite. So we can ensure, for example, that somebody coming out of a BIPL process does in fact have permission to initiate a human task. This is just a quick slide to show that the injection of policies into SEA components is trivial. It's really just a single declarative entry into the XML document that indicates what policy you want to apply to this service endpoint. And that can apply to both service invocations, messages coming into the service, message outflow, so messages flowing out of the service to get to interact with other back-end systems. Last point I wanted to bring up is there's been a real upsurge in interest in our BAM products and business activity monitoring in general. Our BAM agents are built directly into the SOA platform, so we can do automated BAM integration, and that can be done hyper-efficiently because they're all co-located in one process. So BAM is set up such that we can start to take information out of the flow of business documents between services. We can inject information into BAM from the BIPL process itself, and as business events start to flow asynchronously through the pub-sub hub in the system, BAM can pick up the business events and start to process them into the BAM consoles. So that's a nice additional integration that comes out of the box with the next iteration of the platform, and it's done in a way that the use of BAM and the feed of data into the BAM system is through the same mechanisms regardless of whether you're using BIPL, ESP, or other technology components in the system. A lot of people have been asking about, well, okay, this is great. I have a lot of business processes I want to use with BIPL, or I'm doing things with ESP today. This looks like something I'd be very interested in, but what about the investment I have in Java and J2EE? So what we've been doing is working on integrations between these SOA technologies and the J2EE platform in OC4J, and we've been looking at doing it from several perspectives. Number one, of course, we have a big investment in EJB, EJB3, and J2EE in general. So we want to make sure that users that are building business applications using J2EE standards can hook up with the SOA technologies fairly seamlessly. So we've been investing in that, and we've been doing that both at the product level and in the standards group. We've been working to define the integration points between SCA and J2EE standards. We've been working with the folks at Interface 21 and the developers of the Spring Framework to automate the integration of the Spring Framework and Spring-based applications into the SCA environment, and we've done work internally to make sure that that works on our platform. And we are working diligently on integrating our ADF infrastructure, the Oracle Application Development Framework, together with the SOA suite, and that's been important, I think, for customers that are making an investment there, and also for the e-business suite and the Oracle Business Applications teams. They do quite a bit of development using ADF, and they're strongly motivated to make sure that we have seamless integration between the ADF environment and the rest of the integration technologies. And I think that's the last slide. So I can. What we could do now is take some questions.
Yeah, I was wondering about the testing all this stuff, because if you have like all these processes and running them as one unit, as you were saying, how would you go about testing that?
Well, if the business processes are developed in a relatively straightforward fashion, they can be tested through conventional QA processes to a point. What becomes more complicated is when you start to try to simulate the external execution environment.
Exactly, yeah.
And that is, and to the best of my knowledge, not an area where Oracle directly offers a testing solution. I know there are a number of companies out there that do this. There was a company called Solstice Software.
Yeah.
It provides a framework for testing. They started out offering test solutions for EAI environments. And I think they've been migrating towards SOA application
testing. It's really right now I'm at a customer which is actually a big Oracle customer, and they have this message service that, you know, is kind of a broker between all kinds of different external and internal systems. And we're trying to build a client application on that system. And the biggest problem we have is not testing our own application or testing the broker, but, you know, do the integration testing. Because you have to have all these, either you make a lot of stops to, you know, simulate that the external systems are replying with different kinds of messages, or you have to, you know, organize that they all participate in your test. And because it's all isolated services that you're calling, that's really difficult.
Yeah, I've talked to people who have taken different approaches to this problem. I've not found anyone has been successful with any single approach. But I found that typically people use a combination of simulations and staging environments.
Yeah.
To try to sort of do a thorough a priori testing before deployment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree.
Staging something that the suite, you know, supports.
Yeah. So
you
need
to stage it and then, you know, go and put it on your production machine. So stage it on some kind of other environment and do some testing with users and business analysts and stuff like that, and then, you know, just deploy it to your production environment and.
So for the 11AS release, we're managing the platform with a infrastructure we call MAS, which is our cluster administration server.
Yeah.
And this runtime environment, the fully integrated runtime environment, will be supported and driven by MAS for deployments, and MAS is supposed to support staging capabilities for real system deployments. I have to admit that I have not actually sat down and tested that end-to-end myself. The 11 release is slated for sometime next year, so it's certainly a priority of mine to make sure that we've got some sensible staging solution.
Yeah, because I think, especially if you have, you know, like the project I'm in right now, it's a lot of security issues involved, and because it's for the Dutch police, so it's really important that everything is tested reliably, and that it's easy to promote, you know, from one environment to another, and also for, you know, you want to do load testing and performance testing and all that kind of stuff, and if you, especially if you have a complex system, which you usually have if you do service-oriented stuff. It's very important that you can test it.
Yep. Yeah,
I had a couple of questions.
I had a question
about SOA being so heavy on XML, because J2E seems to be going away from XML towards things like annotations, and you see many articles talking about how it was difficult with XML and annotations are better and stuff. So, but SOA looks very heavy on XML stuff. So, is there some annotation support or something like that planned?
So most of the technologies that are specific to process support and integration tend to be very much XML-centric, both in terms of the assumption that the data model underlying the technologies is based on XML, and the definition of the business logic itself is typically captured in XML. I tend to look at the latter as being more of a convenience for the construction of these systems as declarative systems, rather than sort of low-level system programming languages, because just a lot, it's easier to build and maintain and to a certain extent understand XML content than it is a lot of low-level code. When it comes to scenarios where you need to build things closer to the system programming model, it's clearly the case that Java is adding large-scale support for annotations, which I think is a very good thing, as long as the annotations relate to capabilities that are the implementation classes really should be aware of. So things like transaction rules are a perfect case in point. If you look at the old EJB specs, they would configure transaction rules through external XML files, but they weren't really divorced from the business the way you wrote your EJB. The EJB sort of had to be coded with the knowledge that there would be transactions present, that the container would be managing the transaction, or the bean would be managing the transaction. That didn't really work well in practice. There was sort of that intimate relationship, but this enforced separation. So I think annotations are going to come to the table and solve that problem. That you'll be able to do declarative injection of things like transaction management, some security checks, lower level security checks, in the context of the code where it belongs. I don't think it's a. On the other hand, I think there are a class of problems that are essentially orthogonal to the business logic and don't belong in the class files. So that might be things specific to network connectivity. I've implemented this business logic. There's really no reason to, for example, embed in there in the business logic information about the specific wire protocols and endpoint connectivity that you're going to use in the production environment. So I think that there's going to be a bit of a balance struck between these two worlds, and I think what you're going to see is that people are going to even out on a division of labor between annotation processing and configuration XML, where the things that are really about the external environment and are really divorced from the implementation of business logic will wind up being in XML, and things that are more intimately wed into and necessarily a part of the implementation of the business logic are going to wind up in annotations. Did that make sense?
Yeah, but that hopefully that will be the way things work out. But developers always take the most sensible approach, so I guess.
Right. That's true, and then that's I guess the responsibility for project leads and solution architects to help people understand that everybody's sort of tempted when they get a new technology to use it everywhere, and it's just part of the maturation process as a technologist is understand that, well, so when you're given a new hammer, it doesn't transform all your problems into nails. I mean, you look at, I talked about Spring a bit. One of the things that interests me about Spring is that while Spring does take advantage of annotations in places, it really is a system that, despite the, I guess some of the movement toward annotations that's happened in the Java community in particular, Spring is really doesn't make use of annotations at all. I think they're there sort of reluctantly present to the extent that they're there, and yet it's something that has been massively popular with developers. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out.
Right.
Great. Do we have any more questions? No? Okay. So I think
I was wondering this whole thing you were presenting, is that already in the preview, or what part is in the preview and what part is going to be in 11?
So
go ahead, Doug.
So most of the stuff will be in 11. So what we have done for 10.1.3.1 is, so the preview that is currently on OTN is migrate all the web services runtime on the single web services stack. So as you know, Beeple, OWSM were coming from acquisition, so we migrate them to the same web services stack, same management tool. Yes, what do you want to add?
Hello? Sorry, I think you got cut off.
So mainly 10.1.3.1 is putting the SOA service, the different SOA component, OWSM, Beeple, ESB, in the same installation package, same web services stack, same management tool. So we use GMX for most of the management, and same development tool using Oracle JDeveloper.
Okay, so that Spring stuff is going to be in 11 then.
Yes. So what we have for 10.1.3.1 around Spring is how to use Spring with Oracle stack. So how you can plug that in TopLink, in JPA, in EGB2EO.
Yeah.
And we have how to's that explain how to do SEA vision on implementation.
Does that answer your question, Aniki?
Yeah, well, the last sentence was cut off again, I'm afraid, but I think I got the idea. Thanks.
Oh.
So just go to the how-to page on OTN for OC4J, and you will see Spring information.
I know how to use Spring, and that's not the problem. I was just interested in when the part where you used to use the container.
It will be in 11.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Now, Tug and Greg, are you guys going to be at Open World presenting?
Yes, we will. At least I will. Sorry.
Okay. So I'm sure you're going to have more information on this then, right?
Is there also something about the SDO? Because that's also part of SCA, right?
They're related in that we, you know, the same partner companies are working on them under the same framework. You can use SDO without SCA, and you can use SCA without SDO. So in some sense, they're another one of these cases where the technologies are really complementary but not required to be used together. I don't know what kind of product announcements have been made, so I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but we're certainly working on SDO both at the standards level and the product level, and I think we've got I think we can say that our SDO implementation is based on work that the TopLink team has been doing, and it's really quite sophisticated. So I don't know, Todd, do you think, is there some way you can find out more, provide more information on that?
Yeah, I don't have any more information on that today.
Okay, maybe we can have a web conference or something about it once, sometimes.
Yeah. We can put that as one of the subjects.
Sure. Yeah, we can schedule that for, you know, the next couple of months down the road.
Okay.
Okay. Harsha, do you have any other questions?
Not really.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, this was a long one, and I apologize for the delay getting this started. But I will have the slides posted on the discussion forum, the private discussion forum. And unfortunately, I don't think, Greg, you didn't happen to record this web conference, did you?
I did not.
Okay.
No. That's my fault there, yeah.
No. I tried to conference you or chat with you, but I don't think it went through. Anyway, I'll put the telephone conference on file in the discussion forum, so at least we'll have that part.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks.